This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, peeps everywhere. So good to see you. Good morning. It seems like a lush life right now at Jikoji. It's raining yesterday. The plum, for those of you who are here at Nehane, I hope you noticed the plum trees. The flowers are gone and now we're all in maroon leaves. And the apple tree is just starting to flower and leaf out. The green of spring is branching and shooting out. And I hope you hear the green calling you in your neighborhood, wherever you are. I don't know if it's green yet back east. Even though it feels like spring, we're in the middle of winter practice period. And we're studying understanding self in relationship. We've been considering this topic, doing exercises and talking with practice partners. And maybe we're getting a feel for understanding what is self in relationship. I have a sense that understanding self and relationship is all about love. But first, we're going to talk about self. Uchiyama Roshi wrote in his book, Opening the Hand of Thought, "What is most crucial to remember is to pursue the way of the self selflessly, not for any profit. Because we concretely are universal self, there is no particular value in talking about it. Yet, if we don't make every effort to manifest it, it just knowing about it is useless. To concretize the eternal, that is the task before us. Even if we have a cup of cool, clean water sitting right in front of us, if we don't actually drink it, it won't slake our thirst. The expression of universal self is a practice that is eternal, but to the extent we don't walk it ourselves, it won't be our path. May this, the actualization of our universal self, be all our life work." In practice period, we've looked at self through the question of what is real, how physics tries to define what is real. The physicists right now are saying that something is real only if it is invariant. Invariant means it doesn't change depending upon a frame of reference. You might not be surprised to know that the self seems pretty variant, right? One minute we're this person, the next minute we're this person. These feelings and thoughts are always in flux, and so are ourselves. Even though we act like the self is real, truth be told, everything we call self is definitely not unchanging. It is, we are variant. When physicists look at reality in the self, they see everything existing only in relationship. We've also looked at understanding self in relationship through the visual language of painting. And now I have some show and tell. But before you look at these images, I want you to just take a moment with each one. They're going to be all together. Practice period people, you've seen them, so you get to revisit them. I want you to think about what the artist might be trying to say to you about the self in context, what you experience, regardless of what you think the artist was trying to tell you about self in the context of that painting and subject to its environment. So here we go. I hope you can see them. Ta-da! Okay. So, some of you may recognize some of these. Some of you may recognize them from practice period. So we spent some time on each of these images. I hope you can see them adequately. Looking at how what appears to be the subject in each painting relates to its context and how or what it elicits in your response. I could stay here for a while, so I'll stop. But think about it. The homework, when we finish this week, and by the way, the guest teacher that week was my almost 93-year-old mother, thank you, Mom, who's an artist, a painter. And the homework that week was to, in your week, not when you're sitting, but in your week, when something came up, some emotional, let's call it a reaction that came up, something that felt maybe very alive or very hot or anything, could be joyful. When something came up for you, to just take a moment to see your reaction as if you and everything were in this painting, in a painting of your life, of your experience in that moment. And to look at it that way, look at what's happening in the moment as if you're the subject in context of a painting. And who is that that's in that painting? And how does he, she, it, we relate to its environment, the entire scene, taking in the whole scene of your experience? It can be very profound, that moment of seeing that you might not be the center of the painting, that you might just be part of the scene. You could be like in this old Chinese landscape painting. Do you see the little tiny people? That could be you. Or in the Turner, the very fluid scene, where are you? So you can have that experience at any time in your life, just zooming out and seeing where you fit. And when you do, it kind of changes the experience. At least it can. It has that potential. So, in the last 2 weeks, we've been looking at identity and its masks. The homework during this section, talking about identity, was to write down a big list of all of your identities, all of the roles you've played, starting when you were a wee one, as long as you can remember, all the way to right now. And after you've made the whole list, go back to the top. And if you look at that first item and the second and keep going all the way through, and you take away, if you say to yourself, if I take away this mask, am I still me? You just keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going, like we do, keep going. One of the people in winter practice period said, I could cross everything off the list until I got to friend. I couldn't cross that off. Another person said that she's still making the list. It's still going on. But that she was going someplace and she noticed a reaction and she said to herself, oh, am I that person? And then the next reaction, oh, am I that person? Everyone, a mask. Boom, boom, boom. So she was really using it to ask the question, who is this self in this relationship right now? In one of her teachings, the late, great Charlotte Joko Beck used a haiku poem to explore self. This haiku was written by Hajiwara Kashin, and it's said to be the only surviving one of his poems. In 1864, it was written, and he wrote this. There is neither heaven nor earth, only snow falling constantly. Joko Beck says, isn't that a lovely image? For someone like me who's never lived in the snow, it's really a lovely image. I just like, oh, people who live in the snow tell me, no, it gets gray and slushy. But I want to do a little exercise with you, and I want you to help me fill in the blank with whatever is happening right now for you, okay? So I'll read the first line, and then I'll start the second line and replace snow with whatever is happening for you right now, okay? So I'll read you the haiku again so you can think about it. Don't try too hard. There's no wrong answer. There's no right answer either. Just what's here right now for you, okay? And I'll go first to make it easy. So I have to think about, don't try too hard. Don't think about it. But here we go. There is neither heaven nor earth, only joy falling constantly. So when you're ready, please gusho. Anyone can do this. And just unmute yourself if you're in Zoom land. And here, just... and we'll be ready. So anybody ready? There is neither heaven nor earth, only
friends
falling constantly. Who else is ready? Anybody out there? Randy, the role, hang on. Unmute. Unmute, Ran. Okay, I'm going to do the first line. There is neither heaven nor earth, only
life.
Life. I hear you. Life falling constantly. Thank you.
You're having fun.
Sunshine.
Some of the time. Anybody else here? And then go back and forth between here and there. Okay. There is neither heaven nor earth, only
rain
falling constantly. Thank you. Ben, right? Your name's
Ross.
Ross. Hi, Ross. Don, where are you? There you are. Hi, Don. There is neither heaven nor earth, only
Dharma gates
falling constantly. Thanks, Don. Karen, there is neither heaven nor earth, only
the wheel turning constantly.
Thank you, Karen. Anton, there is neither heaven nor earth, only
rays
falling constantly. Thank you. Anybody else? Joel, Kyoshin-san, there is neither heaven nor earth, only
Friends appearing constantly.
Thank you, Joel. Peter, where are you? Hang on, let me find you. There is neither heaven nor earth, only
Warm sunshine
falling constantly. Thank you, Peter. Ben, there is neither heaven nor earth, only
bed sheets
falling constantly. Thank you, Ben. Judy, there is neither heaven nor earth, only
mountains
falling constantly. Thank you.
Yoshi-san, there is neither heaven nor earth, only...
Sounds.
Sounds, falling constantly. Thank you, Bob. Emmy, ready? There is neither heaven nor earth, only...
Field,
falling constantly. Mariko says, I will do yours. There is neither heaven nor earth, only breath falling constantly. Thank you, Imoto-chan. Curtis. There is neither heaven nor earth, only flowers falling constantly. Are we done? There is neither heaven nor earth, only... only dandruff falling constantly. From the Buddha over there. He can say that. There is neither heaven nor earth, only
gravity.
Ain't that the truth? Only gravity falling constantly. Okay, I think we might be done. Are we done?
And there was no wind, it was night, and I was in the city, so there was some street lights. And so you could stick your tongue out and have the snowflake fall on your tongue. But also, it was just because of the street lights at night, you could just see all around, slowly, all everywhere. And I think it's really good and evocative. It's like, who is doing an evocative thing? Obviously, there's plenty of kind of snow, but in this case, it's almost like where you look, there's some light or whatever, totally calm. And then, of course, once you sit down, then with everything. It's very warm. That's where you're faced with snow, and it's kind of cold and wet. And
well, I really enjoyed that. Thank you for playing. When we said our words about, you know, what was falling constantly, did we identify with a particular self that was having that feeling? Is my joy a self that I call I? We're talking about identity. Is this feeling automatically associated with me? The minute I say joy falling constantly, am I the joyful one? Is that who I am? Is that me? Is that mine? I don't know. It might be me and mine and I for a millisecond, but then it's gone. And when we sit zazen, we sometimes can see there's a lot of I, me's, and mine's, right? They're coming and going in flux and motion, movement all the time. And our many selves can kind of be like a magic trick. Now you see it, now you don't. It just keeps going on by. When we allow that every self, everything is in this motion and flux, it's changing. My experience is that I'm kind of moving with it, that I'm just going along. And conversely, when I try to grab one of those selves, it doesn't feel like I'm moving along anymore.
if it's not snow, but grief falling constantly, then I say I'm the grieving one. It's hard to keep going. I'm stuck. If I say I'm the longing one, it's hard to keep going. Even if I say I'm the joyful one, then I'm going to have to let it go. It's hard to keep going. We can't really move with things if we're holding on. It's like a banister on a stairwell. If you're climbing the stairs and you hold on to the banister and you grip that banister, it's pretty hard to move, right? If you hold on, you can't move. If you just kind of slide up, hang on to what's happening, you get to move with it. So it's all about relationship, right? With all of those selves, with the banister, with each of you and me, whoever we are, it's all about that relationship. And when I say relationship, I don't just mean to me and to you, I mean to the whole painting, the whole picture. Which brings us to the understanding part about understanding self and relationship. Not that they can be separated in my experience, but we'll talk about that. In practice period, I start every talk with this quote from Dogen. Of course, I have to, and also it's a good quote. This is his commentary on the Lotus Sutras from Shobo Genzo. He said this: Buddha Dharma cannot be known by a person. For this reason, since olden times, no ordinary person has realized Buddha Dharma. No practitioner of the lesser vehicles has mastered Buddha Dharma. Because it is realized by Buddhas alone, it is said, only a Buddha, together with another Buddha, can thoroughly master it. So when we sit down and we quietly observe our moving selves, we may let go of attachment to any particular self that's there. We may experience these boundaries, these barriers between us and other versions of ourselves and each other and the floor and the cup and the air and the Manjushri tree outside. We just may feel that kind of the edges of it kind of get soft, fuzzy. Zazen, I think, shows us what's kind of obvious when we are willing, which is that we're not really separate. Separation arises because we've created this self that is the longing one or the grieving one or the joyful one. And then we identify with it and want to hang on, or we want to get rid of it. In the fill-in-the-blank exercise we did with the haiku, when we were listening to each other, did you feel other people's words? Did you identify with them in a way like, oh, I felt that. I thought I heard some murmurings of recognition. I know I felt that. I can relate to your snow falling. In our practice of observing and allowing, we feel compassion. It just happens automatically. You don't even have a choice if you're paying attention. You're just along for the ride. And I think when we allow what's actually happening, the snow, the grief, the longing, the joy, the anger, the breath, the dandruff, we can actually think it's all okay. Like, okay, all caps, okay, it's all okay. We're gonna endure it all anyway. We don't have a choice. It's all okay. And we can be content. I always feel it's very radical to say that word, but you can be content. You can be content when you're not content. You can be okay when you're not content. You're gonna be okay. We're all gonna be okay. Doesn't mean it's gonna be easy. Sorry, I don't wanna suggest that, but it's gonna be okay. We're all gonna be okay. We're going to endure whatever feels unacceptable. This kind of allowing puts us in a position that we can see clearly what should change and what can't be changed. And we can act in a place that is helpful instead of stewing, instead of hanging on to the banister, instead of saying I'm stuck, instead of being stuck. This isn't a blanket acceptance, like, oh, I accept all this terrible stuff that's happening. But it is, it's not numbing out, okay? Don't numb out. Don't pretend like this is all about bliss. It's not. It's about this, not bliss. What's happening right now? And I think it helps us develop kind of this, we get to use our minds in a helpful way. We get to discern what we should do. If that sounds like equanimity to you, bingo. I think that's right. Equanimity is one of the four Brahmaviharas, each of which I think encourages us to develop what I'm calling love. I'm a little hesitant to use that word because it's a four-letter word and some people have trouble with the word love. It has a lot of layers that bring up a lot of feelings, but to kind of just go with me for a minute, okay? Just pretend like you never heard the word before and I'm saying an old Sanskrit word called love. And so the four Brahmaviharas is also called the four divine abodes or the four immeasurables. I think they're all about developing love. The first is loving kindness, metta. Starts here. Next is compassion, karuna. The next is sympathetic joy, mudita. And the last is equanimity, upekkha. Each of these expressions of mind states are a way of developing love, I think. Each one of those involves a tender, warm, sympathetic attitude towards oneself. And then when you get there, it just blooms to everybody. You don't have a choice. In our winter practice period, in this open-hearted sharing and discussion we've been having, what we hear from each other about understanding self in relationship is all about love. Maybe that's what the Buddha was teaching us, all about love. Maybe love is all that's left after we've seen our interdependence, how we're creating everything together. Maybe in each moment we're having a relationship with everything, like in the paintings. If you're holding a cup of water, you can really, really, really appreciate that you're helping this cup fulfill its purpose, and maybe this cup recognizes that. And it's slaking your thirst. So I'm going to have a sip so I can let it do its job. The late great teacher Thich Nhat Hanh said that understanding is love's other name. I think he meant that to love another person means to fully understand and accept his or her or their suffering and their joy. We have each experienced what it feels like to be really deeply understood. It feels like love, right? To really be seen feels like love. And when we give that understanding, it feels like love to the other person too. And then there's this thing that is not you, not them, it's us, it's between us. And it's no giver, no receiver, it's just delicious and good. In our chant this morning, we said, let no one deceive another or despise anyone anywhere. Through anger or irritation, we don't wish for another person to suffer. That teaching points us to give rise to happiness, to avoid creating unhappiness, to give rise to happiness, to avoid the causes of unhappiness. And of course, it starts here. We can't wait for the people to give it to us. They can't give it to us. You have to create it and give it away. I think this understanding is really essential, that we give this to ourselves. We have to give it to ourselves first. And from there, it just keeps blooming in concert with everything. Whether it's snow or joy or anger or longing or dandruff. Almost 2 years ago to the day, I had an experience here at Jikoji that has stayed with me. It has to do with this. On a Monday morning in the little small zendo where we sat this morning, after the morning sit, there's this little huddle, and I was leaving that morning. So I was saying thank you to everybody. And out of my mouth came these words. Everywhere I look, all I see is love. At the time, I was as someone else had said it. I mean, I really wanted to go like that. Who said that? I hadn't thought about it. It just came out of my mouth. I had a very curious feeling that I was like a puppet. I mean, I know I have agency, but it came out of my mouth like a song that I had never heard before, and it just came out. There was a little bit of quiet for a few beats. I was very embarrassed. I felt like my clothes had fallen off, and I was very exposed, and I didn't know what to do. And then Mike asked, who wants breakfast? And I was like, oh, I do. And we all just moved forward. But the bodily sense of being spoken through has stayed with me. And it was, I think, a large part of why I picked understanding self in relationship for winter practice period. Who was that? Who said that? And if everywhere all she sees is love, then I want whatever she's having for breakfast every day. Zazen is, I think, where we practice love. Love is practiced because we allow what's happening to actually be happening. And we say, okay, all caps, okay. We're saying yes to ourself in relationship, like in the painting, saying yes. It's the beginning step in paying attention to what's needed right now. And it's kind of a practice of self-love, not the narcissistic, I'm fantastic all the time self-love. Just, I'm okay. I'm okay, just like this, I'm okay. And so is everybody else, by the way. We see that our edges get soft and we can be okay, not hanging on to any particular self, altogether doing that. And I find that's always here. That understanding is always here. You don't have to be a Jikoji. You don't have to be anywhere. It's just available. Everywhere I look, all I see is love. I'm going to close with a poem by Angie Boisafan. I think you'll understand why. All these others. I sit at his not whole mouth, loving its innocent clarity, its truths which sail out one by one, like young owls learning to fly, while off her rasping, generous tongue, the oldest secrets keep sliding into my grateful lap. And when that girl throws back her hair and bares her throat, telling her pain as if she were launching little ships of desire, I keep wondering, how can I love so many people? It cannot be moral to love so many people. It cannot be sane. Oh, I am a cracked cup filled to overflowing, astonished and crying out all your names. Okay, comments, criticisms, questions, I suppose. Anybody?
Could you just say the original haiku that you started with from Joko?
Yeah.
Just say, yeah.
It says, "There is neither heaven nor earth, only snow falling constantly."
Thanks.
You're welcome, Rand.
Can you read the last poem again? I just need it again.
Yeah, you're very predictable in this way, Bob. Who are all those others? Who are all these others? I like that it's these, right? Who are all these others? I sit at his not whole mouth, loving its innocent clarity, its truths which sail out one by one, like young owls learning to fly. While off her rasping, generous tongue, the oldest secrets keep sliding into my grateful lap. And when that girl throws back her hair and bares her throat, telling her pain as if she were launching little ships of desire, I keep wondering how I can love so many people. It cannot be moral to love so many people. It cannot be sane. Oh, I am a cracked cup filled to overflowing, astonished, and crying out all your names. It's good, right?
It's Angie.
It's Angie. Did you have something? Did you?
I had a question. So you talk about moving on from identity. Is there any tips for like noticing when you're, you know, in the same way there's like real non-attachment and false attachment, you know, is there a similar kind of thing with moving on that you can, you know, like how can you tell the difference?
Are you asking how to discern whether or not to let go?
Yeah, I mean, like say there's something that maybe needs to be addressed and you just deny it.
Okay, I'm here. I hear you now, Bress. I'll tell you what I do. I don't know if there's a rule about this, but my feeling is if I'm having a reaction, like I'm feeling it in my body, if I'm feeling something, I'm paying attention. I got to pay attention. And I have to figure out who it is that's feeling that. In my experience, it's never the person that's here right now. Do you understand?
Yeah.
And it flows from there. So figure that part out. Who is this? It's having this feeling. The rest, I think, will fall into place.
Yeah.
Nan, thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Okay. I can, hi.
So I have to, I have so many thoughts, but I'm just a few. when you read the haiku, I have to admit my first word when I filled in was there is only mud. And then I like that answer.
So did Rain. Emmy, so did Rain.
All right,
you're not alone.
I'm sorry, I missed it. But then I said field, and I equally like field because of the quantum field theory recently, but also the first time that I saw the world and in a way that we are all a part of it was at Jokoji, and it was with one of the chants that includes field in it. and that's always been one of my favorite ways to understand the world. So thank you for your talk. And when you said part of relationships is befriending ourselves, or you said developing an understanding with self. So, and an understanding, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say. So I think that those two are where I'm at with understanding, maybe myself, because it takes a befriending ourselves, like you said, an understanding. So anyway, thank you. It's good to see everybody.
I'm with you there, Em. Jackie.
Hi, thank you. I like the exercise with the poem. And the first thing I thought was sadness, and the next thing I thought was dissatisfaction. you can see I'm in a certain place coming into this. And then I thought about Ukraine, and then, but somebody else had just said dandruff. And so I didn't feel like bringing these things in and changing things, which is like gripping onto the banister, right? So I put it in the window. I put only borders falling constantly. And then I saw that, oh, that's not just about Ukraine. That's not just about political boundaries. And that's maybe got something to do with dissatisfaction, sadness. And so that was a really useful exercise for me. Thanks.
You're welcome. Me too.
I can't remember. Did you give your only snowfall falling?
I did, but I'd have to say something else now. I said joy, but joy. Randy, joy. I have to think about joy now. Let me just think. I don't know if that's what's here right now. Only contentment falling constantly. It just keeps moving along, babe. I can't hang on to any of them. I wish I could.
But okay.
How about you? Did it change, Randy? Is it different now? What's falling?
Well, I liked what I think it was Emmy said something about mud.
Yeah. Well, that's because you're a mud rat.
I'm in my studio right now looking at a bunch of cooked mud. So
only cooked mud falling constantly in Randy's studio.
Ready to glaze it. it made me but I love the exercise, and as you said, it keeps changing. So that's, I guess, awareness and impermanence are playing with each other.
Yeah, as long as we could let that happen, we'd probably have an easier time.
Yeah,
it's happening anyway.
Yeah, it is happening. Oh my God.
Karen, did you have a gusha?
Sorry, but thank you so much. So this has been a really wonderful talk, and also, you know, an extension of a winter practice with you. And suddenly I thought of this ending of a movie that I saw where they were really kind of getting into a ridiculous situation, and it really wasn't clear how they were going to resolve this situation. And then at that point, frogs started falling. Do you remember this? Or toads, if they're falling down, the guy is in the car, and all these toads are falling out of the windshield, and he puts on the windshield wiper. Anybody know that one? Anyway, but this conversation of whether we put a negative or a positive into that poem is made me think about that sometimes I don't really, I said, the wheel is turning constantly is what I threw out. And then I realized, you know, I meant that in the sense of the turning of the wheel in terms of what we hear about in Buddhist, you know, I guess, writings. But then I guess I realize I almost don't understand that sometimes we think about that's the turning of the original teachings and the turning of the original Buddhist teachings. But then we learn also about this karmic wheel that that we are supposed to come to more understanding of so that we can have a sort of stand back perspective of that turning wheel. So I don't even understand the answer that I put into that poem.
Yeah, that's your asterisk response, right? Yes. There's more to it. Yeah, and I think maybe just returning to where you are might be the most useful thing. Where's Karn? You know, when we sit here, but really anywhere, I think about kind of like that old Aretha Franklin song, who's zooming who? Like everything's preaching to you if you stop. The clouds are preaching freedom, right? They just keep going. And leaves falling off the trees, they're preaching letting go, right? They just let go. And the buds that are on the trees outside, they're preaching, hey, right now, things are happening right now. And anybody who's been to Jokoji hears the Stellar Jays. For me, they're always saying, wake up, wake up, sleepyhead, wake up. So you're preaching Dharma, Karn. You're preaching Dharma. Every time you approach yourself and all of us with a compassionate heart, you're preaching Dharma. Thank you. Jiro-san.
It's all very well and good that we kind of begin to sense our own multiplicities or constant flowing. But it's very hard to relate to other people because we have pretty clear ideas about who they are and how they function for us or how we function for them. And aren't we rather stuck on other selves?
I don't know who you are. Do you know who I am?
I relate to you as in my sense of you.
But it changes. Does it change?
Not so much.
Huh.
And I think that's generally true in my life with other people.
So you have an impression of people. Mm-hmm. And you hang on to that one.
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm. How's that working?
So far, so good.
Well, I wouldn't worry about it then. Sounds like it's working really well. Doesn't always work for me. I really spend some time projecting onto other people. Mm-hmm. And I want them to be who I want them to be. Damn it. And they should stay there. And or stop being who they are, which is way worse, actually. Because then I'm really got a lot of burden. Here. And every time I feel that they should be somebody else, it's always about me. So awful. It's always about me. So, you know, if I can let them be whoever they are, then I get to be free too. So if this is working for you, maybe you're having fresh reality every time. Maybe I'm really consistent for you, but I'm not for me. Not at all. But I'm hoping that you're enjoying whoever it is you think I am. Thank you. I hope I'm not too much trouble for you, Jiro.
One more. Great. great.
No.
No. Todd, did you have something?
Yeah, it's a little bit.
It has to be quick though, because okay, that's so Doug.
One thing that I noticed, and I have been noticing, well, one thing I really appreciated was that you showed paintings. And as much as people know me now, I come from knowing a language that is in vision. So when you, what was interesting more and more is when you said to complete the poem was an image appeared. And this is how this works, ironically, is in imagery, but it's in our mind, right? So this is much of it is like that. It's a circle of images describing images. So I just wanted to comment on that part as a certain responsibility.
Yeah, I like that because I see you talking about context. That you're having an image arise. It's yours. And it's context for whoever the self is that just created that image. Because you're looking through your eyeballs, right? You're not looking through my eyeballs.
I mean, I just think I'm trying to notice what is predominant.
That you're creating.
Okay. What seems to be dominant. And words are different also. So they are underscored. And yet underneath them, I find paintings, if you will, images.
Thank you. Okay, I think that was the call. Unless someone has a burning desire, in which case I would take the heat from Doug.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.